It's Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
So, Kirk,
we're back.
We're back. How are you, Trevor?
Good. I really, really enjoyed the interview we just did with a friend of the show, Sue. We've talked to her a few times, and a new friend, Chase.
Yes, we literally just finished it. Like, this is the, like, when was the last time we got to voice an episode immediately after it was done?
Pre-COVID.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, so let's catch up. What's new?
I did 115 flu shots on Monday.
Well done. You were wearing the appropriate PPE?
I was. I had my N95 mask on. You know those goggles that you had in high school chemistry class? I had those on. Yeah, I look particularly sexy.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you did. So COVID, yes. I guess we should always recommend people go to TWIV if they want to learn about the COVID virus, right?
Yes. Our other favorite podcast, TWIV, for all things COVID.
And this one is Reefer Madness, the podcast. I'm the nurse.
Yeah, you're Kirk Nyquist, the nurse. I'm Trevor Schufelt. I'm the pharmacist.
And you just interviewed somebody that is learning how to homegrown. Tell me that.
Yeah, well, it was great. Like, we follow Sue on Twitter, and she always has lots of interesting things to say. And it's the nicest possible way. She's one of those fantastic food porn people, too. She always has beautiful pictures of the food she's made. But lately, last couple months, maybe since midsummer, she's been posting pictures of these plants, and she's been growing them and having questions and talking about the spreadsheet she's made on, you know, how much money she saved. So Sue hadn't been a grower before, just a medical user. Lyme disease uses it for that. So medical user, a purveyor of, you know, she educates anybody who'll talk to her, but she's turned into a first-time home grower. So there's got to be a lot of people out there. You know, we've mentioned this before, in Manitoba, we cannot grow our four plants. But outside of Manitoba, even if just from a rec-wise, you go, you know, I need a COVID project, I'd like to grow four plants at home. There's got to be a bunch of people out there thinking about that this winter. And so I thought this is very timely.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good interview. And I'm just looking at my notes from as I was eavesdropping in there, and I'll apologize. My goal was to eavesdrop, but I just had to ask a couple.
Well, you started talking about hops. You were in there at hops.
Well, I grow my own hops. Yes, I know all about hops. And growing cannabis is something I'm also very interested in. So I wanted to ask a few questions because I too am researching it and looking at doing medicinal grow. So in Manitoba, we can grow medicinally.
Right. But, you know, as I guess what I'm not a medicinal patient, so call me a rec patient, a rec person or non-medicinal. I am not allowed to in Manitoba. And I don't want to give too much away from the interview, but seriously, as somebody who doesn't know anything about growing, I learned about vegetative state. I learned about trichomes. I learned about male versus female. You know, just those. Because it's got to be a lot of people out there like me who just don't have a clue about the actual how it goes from being a seed to a bud. And we went through a bunch of that.
I like the story that Sue tells. She planted a bunch of seeds because she's interested in watching the plant. She moved her boys outside so she could just see them grow. She allowed them to freeze just to see what would happen. But a grow mentor, Chase, comes in, and he's got a business, Temple Growers.
Yeah, I think his name is Temple Grower, and he'll get this right in there. But I think one of the organizations he's with is called Percy's Grow Room, and they'll help you with some of your home grow, and they have a podcast, Percy's Grow Room podcast, where they talk about growing and or a lot of other stuff. You know, I'm too excited to chat right now. Let's listen to that, and we'll come back at the end.
So we have friend of the show back with us, Sue Litwin from Saskatoon. Sue, amongst your many, many other things, you know, including being a lime advocate and being a fantastic cook and cook with cannabis, you've decided to start growing your own at home. So tell us, why did you decide to start growing at home?
Well, I wanted to save some money. That was the main reason.
That's good reasons, any.
And I applied to grow with Health Canada, and my first application was lost. I was informed about 8 months after I applied. So then I had to reapply.
So was that the still called the AMCPR, or is that the new Cannabis Act?
It's the new Cannabis Act. And it's quite possible I kind of got caught between the two in the administration because it was right around that time.
Okay. Hmm. All right. So 8 month delay, but you finally got your paperwork in place. Right. How did you start out? Is this inside your house, outside your house? Like, so for everyone out there, I know nothing about growing. So Sue is going to walk me through this. So how did you start, Sue?
Okay. So I had gotten some seeds from a client last year. I taught him how to make cannabis oil, and he just lives a few blocks from me. He grew his cannabis outside, and he said, if you want some of these seeds, Sue, you're most welcome to have some. So I took some seeds and I thought, oh, I'm just going to practice grow like in my windowsill. It was okay. Meant to be a total experiment. I was still waiting for my license to grow, and the seeds popped. And I started watching them, and I started talking about the fact that I wanted to grow. And like, I knew Chase was around, like on Twitter, I had seen him, but I hadn't really interacted a lot with him. And all of a sudden he DM'd me and he's like, hey, you want some help? And I said, well, sure. And so he just started talking to me. We just started talking to each other because I love DMs. Give me as many DMs as possible because that's how I've gotten to know anybody in the cannabis space.
Well, so, I'm going to jump in because that's an excellent segue. So for a voice no one's heard on our podcast anyway, apparently though on other ones, Chase, how about you introduce yourself and tell people what you do?
Sure, that would be great. I guess my name is Chase Boucher. I go by Temple Grower on Twitter and Instagram and all that. And I'm really nothing special. I'm a medical grower that's been growing for about just under, I would say, a decade now. And then through the various iterations of the various regulations that the medical cannabis has gone through, I've been through all of that. So, but yeah, I went to school. I graduated in 2014 from the University of Saskatchewan with a geology degree. And so I did that for a few years, but I've always had medical issues with my stomach, and cannabis has always been, kind of the go-to medicine that I've used thus far for it. So, over the years, I've just, kind of tried to hone my craft, I suppose, in terms of narrowing it down to strains and different things that work for me specifically. Obviously, that's important in the medical sense, because we all know there's tons and tons of different strains and cultivars and names of things out there, but not every plant is the same. So it's important to find what works for you. And so that's kind of been my, I guess, journey thus far is just, learning to grow, helping people to grow now that it's legal. Back before legalization, it was a little bit more iffy to, you know, come out of the metaphorical closet, I suppose. But now with legalization, it's a bit easier to be more open about this kind of thing. So, and I've always been a big proponent of people, you know, being able to support themselves in terms of their medicine rather than having to rely on other people, especially in the medical marijuana world. We all know how much of a kind of a debacle that has been, especially on the medical side of things.
Okay.
It's expensive. Used to be a lot harder to get in terms of just supply from the LPs and stuff. It's a lot better now because we have a lot more companies doing it. But so I've always been a big proponent of you know, not being under the thumb of those kinds of things and producing your own. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, Sue, back to you. So you've had some seeds, like you said, pop on your windowsill.
It was just an experiment, really, just to study the plant. I didn't really plan to get medicine out of it. I just wanted to observe the plants. And then when Chase contacted me, we started talking, and well, he says, I mean, he's a genius, I think, in my opinion. Maybe it's just because he concentrates on it so much. You know, when you concentrate on learning something, you learn it well. And he's definitely learned it well. And because he's got a scientific background, he really uses that. Like, he uses that to make his super soil for his cannabis, which is part of what he understands. So, and he's taking the Master Gardener class too. So he got me set up with it. Like, I got a tent and I got everything I needed. So he helped me get everything set up.
Okay. Chase, tell us a little, what, you don't have to go give out any trade secrets, but what's super soil?
Well, that's a really good question. It's kind of a hot topic these days with the super soil and the living soil, but essentially it's, in my mind, and the way I like to define it, is it's a soil that has all the nutrients built in. So you're not having to continually feed every day or every week, like with the Miracle-Gro type of stuff or with your bottled nutrients. So I pre-mix bone meal, blood meal, basically all the components that the plants need into the soil. Prior to it, you cook it. So you let the microbial activity kind of get activated and start doing what they do best. And after about, you know, 3 weeks or so of sitting in a barrel and cooking, the soil is ready to go. And effectively, the way I've designed it, because I worked as a geologist a few years back, and I was out in the fields for 2 to 3 weeks at a time. So I needed something that my partner, my girlfriend here, could just water, basically, because she's not exactly a green thumb. So, yeah, basically all you do is water it until you harvest it. So it's a little bit more simple in the sense that, it's more complex to make in the beginning, but it's not really complex. But yeah, once you get it made, it's basically just a water only soil.
Excellent. Okay, Sue, so you've got formula for super soil. What else is in your sort of starter cannabis setup? What do you have to at the beginning?
So we have a garden store here called Early's, and like, they're pretty good. Like, they're trying to help like people grow cannabis. So they've got all sorts of supplies in their store, and you can buy tents and different lights and fans separately there, but you can also buy a kit. So okay. I thought, I'm just going to do it simply, first of all. And I bought a kit, and it had a CMH light, which I love. It's like the sun. It's all warm and toasty, and it looks like the sun's in there. So I love spending time down there. So does my dog.
Okay. I don't know if you could hear, but that was my dog barking in the background.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, he's annoyed he's not getting cookies fast enough. Okay, so CMH light, what does that mean? I assume it has a whole bunch of different broad spectrum something or other, but tell me what a CMH light is.
You know what? I'm going to turn this question over to Chase, because he gets really nerdy about lights, and I love that.
Okay.
Well, I won't go too much into it. There's entire podcast devoted to these topics. And I'm by no means an expert on this, but CMH, it stands for ceramic metal halide, and it's a type of high intensity discharge light. I'm sure everybody's heard of the HPS, or the high pressure sodium, and the metal halides. They're kind of the traditional technology, I'll say. They definitely work really well, but they're just a style of light, basically. So you have, they're a part of the high intensity discharge, the HID family, though. On the other side, you have the LEDs, which these days are actually getting really, really efficient. So, but yeah, it's just a type of light, and a really, really nice type of light, actually. I quite like using those.
But it was under spec'd for the 4x4 tent.
Okay.
Yeah, bit small.
So my middle buds actually tested higher. I just had my cannabis tested by one place, so we can get into that later.
Sure. Now, and because, again, I know almost nothing. So okay, so you've got a tent, you've got lights, you've got soil, a few other bits and pieces in there. How about just help me out with things like male and female? It's a whole plant male, it's a whole plant female. Tell me a little bit about that.
So plants can be either male or female, and the males, well, luckily they express themselves usually a little bit sooner. And my client's seeds, I planted 12. 10 of them turned out to be males. Okay. So I was left with two females. And the male plants start to get these little balls on them, or little oval-shaped things.
Okay.
And that's kind of how you tell you have a male. And lots of people were posting pictures on Twitter this year because they were trying to figure out their males from their females. So people on Twitter are really helpful with that, I find. So I was able to identify, like from Chase helping me and also from Twitter people helping me. And so I called those 10 males and just kept the two females growing. And then I also got some seeds from Chase and started my grow.
Now, just do male plants not produce flower, like not produce a bud? Is that why you don't need very many of them, or do you need any of them at all?
So the male plants have flowers, and when the flowers open up, they express pollen, and that pollen can go really far, as you'll find out from my testing later.
I'm just going to put a picture up on my screen here of a male
flower. Oh, perfect.
Yeah. You can kind of see the difference. They're quite different.
They're really handsome, though. I love looking at the males.
Beautiful, yeah, but not useful for any sort of, well, other than breeding. I mean, yeah, you don't really need male flowers at all. They just get in the way.
There we go.
So if you've ever seen a hops flowers in flower, they have the cones, right? But then there's the other, because hops and cannabis are actually quite related. In terms of the botanical classification of the plants, they're cousins essentially, and their male flowers look basically identical. It's really cool, but so they pop out like that, and then those little flowers open up and they release their pollen, and the pollen will then float and stick to the stigma, so the little white hairs that you see popping up on the female plants.
Okay.
And when that happens, that's basically fertilization. And then a seed, the pollen will send its genetic information down I don't exactly know how it works, but it fertilizes a seed, and then the seed will grow inside of that bract rather than the Simsimia without seed flower that we're all used to.
I think it's the style, Chase.
That's what it's called?
The stigma is the little things on the style, yeah. Anyway.
Okay, no, I'm learning lots, and Kirk hasn't spoke up yet. I can't believe that Kirk loves hops. I literally have a hops wreath in my house that Kirk made. He makes hops.
Oh, nice.
He makes hops pillows. He's an old beer brewer from forever ago. Kirk loves hops. Come on, Kirk, something.
Hey. Hi, guys. My goal was to be quiet in this interview, but I do have a question. Sue, was it your goal to seed your flowers? Like, did you want to grow this crop with seeds?
That was a really good question, Kirk. So what I did was I planted some of my males outside just to watch them. And they were pretty, and my bunny ate the leaves, and I used some of the leaves in my cooking, and then I culled them because I had a total of 7 cannabis plants. I think my prescription allows for 25, but I don't use as much cannabis as a lot of people. So I just grew 7, and 2 of them were started before the other 5 seeds that Chase gave me, which all turned out to be females. So that was great. But the plants that I started first got too tall for the tent, basically. And I couldn't get the light right and get the levels right. So I decided to move 2 of the plants outside. And my son was kind of like helping. He's a chemistry student. He's really interested in working at a cannabis lab someday. So he was helping me all along, and we were like, well, some of these are your rec plants, some of these are my medicine. We'll just take care of them together. And so I thought, well, if I put two plants outside, it doesn't really matter. They can be his rec plants. And they grew really tall, and I decided to plant them in the garden. I took them out of the pots and planted them where our bunnies used to live, where there were just worms. And like, that soil is super fertile, and I still fertilize them and put magnesium around them. And they got big, beautiful flowers, and they froze three times, but it doesn't matter. People were so worried about their cannabis plants freezing, and maybe it's cultivar specific. Definitely. But mine did great, and I got lots of flowers.
Okay, so let's go. So we'll go back to Sue. So you culled your males. You've got a couple females. You got more females from Chase. So the females that you've got, are they now? Did you do a lot of it still in the tent, or did your females ever end up outside too?
So two of the females that I started at first ended up outside in the dirt in the garden, and the other five stayed in the tent.
And how long does this take, sort of from seed to usable plant?
Well, don't ask me, because I let my plants veg way too long.
Okay, help me. I've heard that term, let your plants veg. What does that mean?
So you need to let them grow a little bit before you change up the light cycle. Well, Chase can add to that, because he doesn't always do that. Sometimes he starts 12-12 right away. Yeah. But like normally you would let them go for about 6 weeks, let them grow for about 6 weeks. And then you can switch to 12-12, and then they'll start flowering.
Yeah, vegetative growth essentially means it's just the plant, when the plant is vigorously growing but not producing flowers, so it's just growing indefinitely. It's kind of the same as not quite the same, but in regular horticultural gardening, you have your tomato varieties of determinate versus indeterminate. So your determinate tomatoes, they grow to a certain height, and they basically stop growing, they flower, they produce their tomatoes, and then they're gone. Whereas an indeterminate variety, like cherry tomatoes, will keep growing like a vine, basically producing tomatoes all along the way, but it effectively keeps growing. Cannabis, in a sense, does that too. It doesn't produce the tomatoes while it's keeping on growing, essentially. It just keeps growing until, like Sue said, you flip the light cycle to from the long day cycles to the short day cycles, where 12 hours of light, 12 hours of dark generally is what most growers use.
And that, okay, so will, during the vegetative state, you do something like 16 and 8 or what? Okay.
Something like, usually 18 and 6 is kind of the most 6? Typical. Yeah.
Okay.
Some people run up to 20. Some people even put 24 hours with certain types of plants, like the autoflowering plants. But I think there's kind of a diminishing returns when you get up to those amount of hours, and plants do need to sleep too, I think, a little bit. Like they do things in the dark.
They're so cute, because the outdoor ones, when it would start to get dark, because it gets dark slowly outside, right? It's not right. Like all of a sudden, and the leaves would droop. And so I'd ask Chase, like, what is wrong with my plants? And he said, they're just going to sleep, Sue. Yeah,
it's funny. But yeah, vegetative growth is essentially the pre-flowering stage it's when you are manipulating the plant. So that's when you can do your toppings, or where you cut the tops of the plants off to make it more branchy. You can bend, and you can break the stems and do all kinds of different manipulation techniques in order to increase the yield. So rather than having the one center major or main cola or main growth stem, you have kind of a bush more like. And especially for indoor growers, that's a great idea to do, just because you do increase your yields quite substantially by knocking off that center and then encouraging the plant to be more bushy, I guess.
Okay. All right, Sue. So you've gone through vegetative state. You have decreased the amount of daylight. So you're encouraging flowering. And then what happened?
Well, I think because I let the plants veg for so long, the ones in the tent, like the ones outside, were fine, because they were like in living garden soil that had a lot of nutrients. But the ones in the tent, I think, ran a little low on nutrients. So next time, you know.
The pots were a bit undersized for as big as those plants got.
That, so. I'm actually really happy with what I got, because near the end, Chase said to me, well, you know, the LPs probably won't grow God bud because you get little popcorn buds. But I mean, the stuff I got is fantastic. So.
There are a couple that do grow it, I will say, but I don't know if it's actually God bud. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, I know. Genetics.
All right, Sue. So you've got, you have plants, they have buds. And I don't know if I'm missing a couple steps, but I've heard about curing. I don't know what curing is. Is that kind of the next thing after you've grown the bud you like?
No.
Okay. What's the next step?
Well, the next step is taking the plants out of the tent and cutting the branches.
Okay.
Harvest. And then harvesting. And then you need to dry them and you need to trim them. So I trimmed them wet. I decided to trim them wet this time just to try to see what it was like.
And what does that mean, trimming them wet?
Just as soon as you cut the branch, you can trim the leaves around the flowers.
Okay.
And if you, some people like to hang their cannabis and let it dry that way, and then they trim the leaves. Some people don't even trim the leaves. You don't have to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what's the idea? With trimming, we get a prettier bud, or does it affect the actual quality?
Not really.
I don't know, actually. That's kind of a debate, isn't it, Chase?
Well, yeah. Like, when you do wet trim, you're handling the bud and you're cutting it. So you do probably get a little bit more trichome damage, I guess, compared to just literally chopping it and hanging it without. Some people say when as the bud dries, those big fan leaves, even if you leave those ones on, they'll kind of hug around the bud and protect the bud from whatever, I guess. But I mean, if you're not whacking it around, there's probably not a huge amount of damage gonna happen in terms of hanging it like that. But when you're wet trimming, you have to manicure it, and you will be holding it in your hand here, and you're clipping around. Sometimes you're digging into the bud a little bit with the scissors. So,
but I saved all my scissors, Hash.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not like it goes to waste. You scrape the resin off of your scissors, and that's probably one of the best or one of the tastiest extracts you can get. It's effectively hand-rubbed charas.
Yeah. And we, like, Chase and I, we use all our trim. Well, maybe Chase doesn't. I do. He gives me his trim, and I use my trim. And I make cannabis oil, and I just send it across the country for free.
Okay. And maybe, because I did know the word, but maybe not everyone does. Sue, tell me what a trichome is, because that's, if we're trying to get medicine out of here, trichome's important. What's a trichome?
So there are about 6 different kinds of trichomes on cannabis plants. So not just the long stalk with a little head on it. There's all kinds of different trichomes on a cannabis plant. But the ones that we're most interested in are the stalks with the heads, capitate. They have heads. Right. And in the head is contained most of the chemicals of the cannabis plant.
All right. So you can see why you wouldn't want to knock those off.
Right.
Exactly. It's really important. And that's one of the things about, weed that's been across the country kind of 4 different times. As it whacks around, those little heads get knocked off and you're losing a lot of medicine. So fresh weed, cannabis,
really, really important. Like, I've been talking about this. It's like when you grow your own cannabis, your mind will be blown. Like, because you learn all sorts of things about the industry by growing your own cannabis, if that makes sense.
Sure, absolutely. I'm sure Kirk, I can't believe you don't have questions at this point.
He's laughing.
He's giggling in the corner. I'm going to let Kirk throw in a couple before we ask a few more.
I'm chomping at the bit. Chase, I have a question. Sure. Master grower, when do you decide to harvest? When do you know the flower's ready?
Right. That's a good question. A lot of people say when the little stigmas start kind of to turn orange, but I don't really find that as a super accurate way of telling. I have a microscope. It attaches to my phone. It's a USB microscope it's a 40 to 1,000 times magnification. At least it says it is. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But I use that to assess the capitate stock trichomes that Sue was mentioning before. And as the flowers mature, they usually turn from right when they first form, they're clear in the heads. And as they mature, they go from a clear color to more of a cloudy color. And then from a cloudy to more of an amber type color.
They get stoned.
Yeah. And I mean, the anecdotal, explanation of that is as it progresses from that clear to cloudy to amber, you get more of a sedation effect as it gets more mature. So you can kind of titrate the effects you like. If you harvest early, it's more of a heady cerebral type of effect. And then as you progress, it's more of a stony type of coach lock effect. But I mean, the effects are probably pretty subtle, and from strain to strain is obviously more important, I think, than the maturity of the trichomes. But personally, I go for just when they're starting to turn amber. So I don't like it too coach locky, I guess, if that's actually what does it. So I go for just when they're starting to turn from cloudy to the orangey color.
Well, Kirk has been talking lately about CBN as one of the cannabinoids that seems to show up the older the cannabis is. So maybe it has something to do with that. But, you know, we'll have to get an actual chemist on to tell us if we're barking up the wrong tree on that.
Yeah. No, I've heard that before, too.
So, Sue, all right. So you've grown, you've trimmed. What's next? Does that immediately get into your cooking, into your oil, or is there something else you do after you trim?
No, after I trimmed, I did wet trimming, and then I had to dry the cannabis because it's just like a leaf on a tree. It's like got lots of moisture, and it needs to dry before you put it in the jar. It'll get all moldy, right?
Okay.
So after I wet trimmed, I did something a little different, and a lot of people were quite interested in it, and it was Chase's idea. He had done it before. He took just a plastic bin with a lid, and he drilled holes all over it on the lid and on the sides, and he strung strings. I did two layers of strings, and then I lay my branches of cannabis with the buds or flowers across those strings.
A little cannabis hammock.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. So it was like just a do-it-yourself little thing. And it was inexpensive. I got like an $11 bin from Canadian Tire. And like, this is all really inexpensive, right?
Sure.
And then, yeah, I left it there for about 7 to 10 days. And I know people have been talking about the snap, the stem test isn't very good test, but I would try the stem like near the top of the cola and in the middle and at the bottom to really see if they were dry yet. So
okay,
not just the middle of the stem.
And now we in the top corner we can see one of Chase's boxes with holes. Okay,
yeah, cool. That's my prototype.
So yeah, he hung his like that. But I left long branches, and I just lay the branches on top of the strings.
Okay.
Essentially, what we're trying to do with this is you just need a controllable environment, because there's a specific humidity and temperature that are ideal for your cannabis to dry at. You want to have it at about 50 to 55% humidity and probably around 16, 17, 18 Celsius for approximately 6 to 10 days, depending on how dense your buds are. And so with this, I basically just put the lid on, and I kind of just cracked the lid as much as I needed it to be to keep it at that temperature and the humidity I just mentioned. I had a humidifier pointed right at it as well. My basement's quite dry. So, but it's basically just a controlled closed environment is all that really represents. And however you do that to dry your plants is the way to go. But yeah, this is just for really, really small batches in case I don't have any room anywhere else.
Well, I keep my cannabis in my bedroom in a drawer. So, and I have hygrometers and I noticed that it was around 50% up there. Plus we have the bathroom, so it's a little bit more humid. So it was really, really easy for me to keep. I kept my cannabis bucket in my tub and we have a shower that's separate in that room. So yeah, I was able, and when it would get like below 50, we would just take a shower.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, red, green.
It worked perfect. And then when they were dry, I just took the buds off the stems and put them in a jar. And yeah, you leave them in there for a month. And the hardest part is not like you want to try it. So you try it all through the cure.
Yeah.
But it's really best after a month.
Okay.
When you hit that 1 month mark, it really comes into its own.
Okay, Sue. So you sort of walked us through this. So if someone right now in Manitoba, unfortunately for rec, we are not allowed to grow our own, but most of Canada, you can grow four plants if you just want to play around with it. If someone says, you know, I need a COVID project. I want to grow my four plants at home. Do you think it's worthwhile? Do you have, you know, a top two or three tips for them to just get started on? What would you say to someone who says, you know, between now and then and 2021, I want to have four of my own plants growing in my basement?
So there's different ways that people grow. I mean, there's the super soil and people use cocoa and hydro. There's all different methods. So I guess, first of all, you have to decide how you want to grow. So that would be the first step. But Chase also has an hour and a half presentation on growing four plants.
Okay. Well, we'll mention it now. Both you guys actually have some really good stuff for the community.
We've got lots.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sue, do you want to talk about Indicapable or the Library of Cannabis or some of the presentation? what do you want to plug today?
Well, I'll plug it all shortly, but
okay.
I'm turning Indicapable into more of a donation platform. I did that this week because, I mean, people in the industry aren't getting paid. And Chase and I had this talk, like we both want to be kind of educators and like he wants to help people grow and I want to just educate generally and help people learn how to cook with cannabis. But there aren't that many people yet who are like into cannabis. A lot of people still drink a lot. But I think it'll change. I think we'll get, you know, a much bigger population for cannabis when people really see the difference and how much healthier cannabis is than alcohol. Not healthy anyway.
Growing too. There's, you know, like I moderate on a website called percysgrowroom.com and it's basically just volunteer grow help is what we do. We're a personal, Percy stands for personal. And it's just a place online where you can come there. We have all kinds of articles and information that are there that we've all written, people like me and other guys like myself, for free about all the questions you've just asked. And you sign up and basically you can ask people like myself questions and post pictures of your grows and we'll help you Q&A stuff. But, you know, we're one of many forums and there are many, many, many videos on YouTube and all kinds of books out there and information. There's so much information. It almost seems like it's too much for some people as
it is.
And so
even basic cannabis knowledge is too much for people.
Yeah. But I would say don't overthink things. And really it's not rocket science. You know, it's effectively specialized horticulture and we've been doing horticulture for a long, long time. That's kind of my point is as like with my super soil, for example, I stay away from all the fancy labeled bottled nutrients and all that stuff, just because, you know, we've been using the stuff that I use for millennia. So it's probably works, right? And why would we all of a sudden
sounds like it's
change?
Got a good track record.
Yeah. And cannabis industry is interesting that it's the only industry that really uses all those fancy bottled newts that are $100 a bottle and, you know, all this stuff. So I don't know. I like to just, you know, be aware of what is at, what you're actually doing. It is just a plant. It is a very special plant, but it is effectively just a plant. And, do your research, but don't worry too much about how much there is out there, because you could read until you die, I think. And then
it's a fun plant. It's meant to be fun.
Yeah.
So guys, that's been really good. Chase, you talked a little bit about Percy's Grow Room. There was also a podcast you were involved with. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. It's the Percy's Grow Room podcast. It's called High on Homegrown, and we broadcast live every Sunday. We're an international panel of there's five mods that are on the panel, and we do, it's a structured show, I guess. We do cannabis news. We do grower question and answer. We do a little bit of famous stoner, history of people like famous activists or other people that have, been around the industry for a long time, strain history and stuff like that. The big part though is our interviews, and we do lots of interesting interviews with a lot of interesting people. We've had Jorge Cervantes, where Ed Rosenthal is coming up. Frenchie Cannoli's been on. Tommy Chong.
Dr. Yeah. Grinspoon was
yeah,
really
Peter
good
Grinspoon.
Too.
I'm sure I'm missing. I know
Danny
I'm Danny
Danko.
I mean, I'm missing lots, but. And I apologize for that. But yeah, it's a good show because it's a general show. It's not, we don't get too much into the science. None of us are, you know, scientists that have actually studied this stuff. So it's a little
out of
scope.
You get more
for us.
Into the politics and the medical side.
We're just like everybody else kind of thing. We're not experts or anything. So we try and keep it, you know, light and easy, but also, you know, try and help and encourage the home grow world because like I say, It's really important for people to realize that it isn't rocket science. You don't need to, you know, like I said, be under the thumb of these companies that, like, you know, they're producing good stuff. Don't get me wrong, but it's not really their fault that it's expensive, but nobody likes to pay this much for the medicine that we've all been paying less for over the years. And we all know, and once you grow, you really do know that it doesn't cost much. It's a bit of an investment in the beginning, but it's very much worth it. Not only the medicine you get, but the experience that you get with it as well.
You don't need so much to look at all the terpene profiles that the LPs have and the cannabinoid profiles, because it just works. When you use it fresh, it just works better.
And Sue, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the, I'm going to get it wrong, but the Library of Cannabis, I think you guys are doing some courses, what have you been up to?
Lots of stuff. I'm always doing lots of stuff. And I'm going to apply for a job soon trimming cannabis. So I'll let you know on Twitter whether I get that or not. I love trimming cannabis.
It won't soon.
I could get a job with working for lots of people, I'm sure. But the Library of Cannabis, it was actually when I first had Chase's God Bud, he gave me some of his God Bud to see, you know, what it was like if I wanted to grow it. And I have this incredible vision, and it felt like I was floating. I was in bed, like I had vaped it and I was in bed. It felt like I was floating in a sea of stars, and all this light, this rainbow light, was emanating from my body. And it was after that that I just thought, hey, I need to bring all of the resources of cannabis together in one spot for myself and for other people. And so far I've just been working on it by myself, so not much is getting done. But I'm hoping that other people will add resources to it. And I just don't have enough time to work on it, but I plan to slowly. The Educanation group is something completely different. We're a group of basically patients. It was begun by two breast cancer survivors, and they really wanted, they had just gotten into cannabis like when they were sick, and found it was incredible. and now they're healthy again, and they wanted to start a nonprofit for education about cannabis because the government didn't give us any education. They just gave us, what was it, 11 warnings from research studies that were flawed. So like none of the information we're getting is true. And we just wanted to do something about that. So we're a very small group, but we have big hearts and a lot of gumption to educate Canada about cannabis. Cannabis. There's a good word.
Kirk, were you trying to jump in?
Well, I was just going to say, I certainly hope that your flogging our podcast is a credible learning experience.
Absolutely, all the time. And I plan to put that in the library. I want to put all the good stuff in the library. I just haven't had time. But I'll do that tomorrow, Kirk, okay?
Sure. just trying to plug our podcast.
Yeah.
Chase, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Help me define craft cannabis.
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's not a thing, is it, Chase? It's just cannabis.
Probably get in trouble for that.
But, yeah, you will. You better watch out.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I think that like craft cannabis is, you know, small scale. You know the producer. You could probably go to their farm and see what they're using, all their inputs. And I don't know, you just have a much more personal relationship than going into a store and buying a product off a shelf and not knowing who grew it. I guess the farmer's market kind of model would be my definition of craft.
Yes, that's what we need to do. That's why we want to get people growing. That's why we're giving everybody seeds, right, Chase?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah. I still say, like, until I can go set up a booth, you know, I'm more than happy to send some stuff in to get a COA to make sure that it is proper, you know, for human consumption and all that good stuff. But until I can set up a booth at the farmer's market, stick my COA on my little post up there and sell my seeds and my cannabis, I really don't think it's completely legal. And that would be a definition of craft, in my opinion. But yeah.
So at this point, you're gifting on the medical side?
Yeah, well, as Canadians, I hope, I'm pretty, yeah, I know we're legally available or allowed to give up to 30 grams of cannabis to another Canadian, and they equate one seed to 1 gram of cannabis. So therefore, we can give up to 30 seeds as recreational or just as Canadians. It doesn't necessarily even need to be for anything, I guess. I don't think you need to define it as such. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. That's how I interpret it as well. Sorry, Trevor.
Those were great questions. I was going to say, though, this has been great. But before I go on and on and on, either of you have any last thoughts, you know, for a first-time grower, what they should think about or just want to wish them well or anything else you guys want to talk about in closing?
I think a grow mentor is a really valuable person. That's what I would say. And okay. Like we continue to learn from each other too, right? So it's really nice to have a partner. Like honestly, you know, when COVID hit, like I was supposed to start teaching cooking with cannabis at the public library in Saskatoon. I had a community room where I was going to do cannabis education. And I was quite sad that all that went away, you know, all that good education went away. So when I met Chase and started growing and started learning more, and I've talked to more black market people now, which has been really valuable because that's where it's at, right? We really need to listen to black market people because that's where cannabis comes from, right?
And
I feel like we are damaging the culture. Like that's just from knowing Chase, talking to him, learning about all of that. It's a little upsetting to me actually that we're not honoring that because we love to share. Like the cannabis community is about sharing. It's not about expensive cannabis.
Keep in mind, I'm a bitter medical patient, so you know.
But I mean, it's made as medicine. Like it's super medicine, so. You know, it should be a lot more accessible and a lot more affordable.
I agree.
I think that's a good end. Chase, any last words?
No, I'll say, if you do decide to start growing, just don't overthink it. You know, there's a lot of info out there, but it's not rocket science. So, I'm
and
glad
there's
to help.
Lots there's, of help out there.
Yeah, yeah. Don't be afraid to ask. There are some jerks. There always will be, but for the most part, the kind of community is very embracing and helpful, and we're all willing to help each other out because we're all in this together. So,
Kirk, that was a nice chat. As I re- for you know happens to be a Thursday night, that was a really nice Thursday evening chat.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed that. I like the fact that this is the second grower we've met, and medicinal grower that uses soil.
Yeah. So Sue uses soil because Chase uses soil, but Chase has been doing a lot of research for, I think he said, more than a decade now, and he is very, very pro soil. I'm sure, and I'm maybe we'll get one on a little later on. I'm sure there's a lot of good things that can be said by people who love hydroponics and how well they can control what's going in and out. But from what Chase is saying, sounds like soil is, once you sort of get the setup, soil is fairly easy.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was interesting because I wanted to ask the question about probiotics versus worms, because when we were talking to the Green Beaver in episode, was it season 2, episode 8, we learned about probiotic soil, and they also make their own soil. And just to give Sue her dues, she was episode 31, where we interviewed her the first time. So, so again, soil comes into play. So I wonder how many home growers use soil opposed to hydro or using coconut, as they say. Because when we met with Delta 9, did they not say that they used the coconut?
I'm losing track of who used what, but we've definitely talked to growers who use hydroponics because they have more control. And I'm going to segue into my cannabis stories. There's got to be some people out there right now who love hydroponics, or others who hate hydroponics, or love soil, hate soil. Record a voice memo on your phone. Tell us why you love, hate your grow medium, and it'll be a My Cannabis story because we need some of those.
I think this was a really good episode, Trevor. I think we need to keep track of the Chase in regards to learning more about growing. There is lots of questions not asked, but one not answered, I guess, but what I liked about it is that it sounds like it's a simple thing. You just throw a couple seeds and you put it through a veg cycle, and you, what is it, 18 to 6, and when they start to form flowers,
I now know what a veg cycle is. I didn't before.
and then you flip them the flower, and that's the point. And I've been doing a little research on this, so now I know where I can find my mentor to dip into it and get more into it.
And all seriousness, and we'll put links in the show notes, but Sue has got quite a big online presence now, everything from her Indicapable to Library of Cannabis to, I'm not going to get it right, her new group with the they were basically having online courses, it's meshing together education and cannabis, and I'm not saying it right, but we'll get all those links. And then Chase has Percy's Grow Room and the Percy's Grow Room podcast. We'll get all that in the show notes. So if any of what they said interested you, we'll be able to have the links there.
Yeah, yeah, do that. And a segue. Do you guys have a choice of music for this episode?
Oh, Chase, you go for it.
I don't know. It's like maybe some really, like, I don't know. I hate being asked about music because I love music, and I just, I'm very like, oh, if I pick this song, it's going to be perfect. And after I pick it, I should have picked this song, should have picked that song. So
if you weren't talking to us right now, what would you be listening to?
I don't know. I don't know why, but the first song that comes to my mind is Sound of the Police by KRS-One.
Like the show? Let us know. We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermed.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next. Whoop,
whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast.
see ya. Your hot shot wanna get pops and be a savior. First show a little respect, change your behavior, change your attitude, change your plan. There could never really be justice or stolen land. Are you really for peace and equality? Or when my car's hooked up, you know you wanna follow me. Your laws are minimal.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good interview, and it segues really well into the interview I did with the craft growers.
Yeah. So do you think we're smart enough to know which one of those we're going to post first?